Like, I remember there are a lot of things where people say, I love nature because the certainty that it gives to them. But how much of when you really love a person, it's not about what you get from them, but it's what you give them.
Hello and welcome to the Journey Onwards podcast. And if you are here for the first time, then I welcome you to the tribe. I hope you've had a good week so far. I definitely have, because if you're in the UK like me or one of the nearby countries, then you'll hopefully also appreciate that we are finally hitting a period of sustained, warm, sunny weather. I'm your host, Anand Dattani, and today I bring you a slightly different but very topical episode. With World Environment Day coming this Saturday on June the 5th, this week's episode features a very relevant guest who is also one of the most kind, passionate, and humble individuals I've ever connected with. After hearing one of my episodes, my guest today reached out to me, not because she wanted to put her compelling life story out there for you to hear, not to leverage the platform to broadcast an achievement or business venture of hers, but purely to share her passion for climate change and to raise awareness for what little changes you can make both in your actions and mindset that can help to make the world around you a more sustainable and happier place to live in. Vivina grew up in India and she speaks about being very grateful for the upbringing she had. While she had a great education and friends and family that meant the entire world to her, she mentions how her real learning, the moments where she began to ask questions about the world that she was passionate to find the answers to, only began once her child was born. With the fortune of her husband's job, Vivina managed to explore and live in a number of places before settling into the UK. But her warm and caring persona is what not only allowed her to form long-lasting friendships everywhere she lived, but it's this same attitude that has allowed her to connect with nature in the same way that she has done with the people around her. And I can say with true conviction, Vivina is someone who practices what she preaches in every aspect of her life. She lives by the motto that living in sync with nature is ideal happiness and is driven by wanting to leave the world in a better place for her children and the future generations by educating others to better understand the current environmental challenges as well as helping people to become aware of what actions they could take to improve the environment as well as providing fresh perspectives on how this can help to tackle some of the other social challenges that we're facing, which she does discuss in today's episode. As an avid writer of her own blog called I See Nature, a school speaker for climate change and animal rights, and a recipient of Al Gore's training program on climate change communication, I am very excited to bring to you this insightful conversation with the intelligent and very purpose-driven Vivina Vincent. Welcome, Vivina, and thank you so much for being on the Journey Onwards podcast.
Thank you, Anand, for inviting me.
I'm looking forward to this for a number of reasons, but especially because I feel there's a lot that I'm going to be able to learn. And I really hope it resonates with the listeners as well, because I think you have a great message to share, but also a lot of knowledge and wisdom that people need to hear about.
Okay, hopefully. I can do my best.
I'm sure you will. And so, I mean, because I know that you know, you're a public speaker or a school speaker on climate change.
Yes.
And you've also had some training from a name that I'm sure people recognize, but I'll let you tell that story. But before we do jump into all that, I really want to know where this inspiration that you had for creating a more sustainable and a better future for the world came from. So yeah, I'd love to hear a bit more about your childhood and where it all began.
I think my childhood is pretty ordinary. It's, you know, it's a regular city life, going to school, have some playtime and come back. And there was an environment club at school, and we had learned about pollution and, you know, man's contribution to that, and I thought, okay, we could change it. And so in the environment club, we used to make placards of, you know, grow trees, protect trees and things and things like that. So I thought if I picked up the rubbish, put them in the dustbin, and if I put placards of growing trees, I have done my responsibility towards environment. Obviously, that time it was very basic. I really did not connect to the environment as much as I am now. But yeah, that was a starting point. But when I look back at it and I'm like, that's not really what you do. That's not enough. So that's where it started. But as again with education, I kind of forgot about it. And over the years, I was just meeting people. But I think when my daughter was born, I think that incident has fueled up the urge to protect and give her a better future.
What really fascinates me about this is in the current day, mm-hmm. where the education system, I feel it somewhat misaligns with the future in a way that, you know, the education system was built on this idea of teaching children how to be good at memorizing and learning and being very productive and efficient, yes. right? And it suited the Industrial Revolution and mm-hmm. the way the economy was going at that point. But obviously now we live in an age where it's more about the innovative thinkers and thought leaders and people who know how to ask the right questions. They're going to be the ones that mm-hmm. drive big change going forward. What's your opinion on, do you feel the education system is catching up, or what needs to be done?
I totally agree in certain aspect, because when I was young, it was predominantly like, you know, you need to score marks. So even I would just probably mug up. I often tell people that I had started having the real education only after my child was born, because that's when the real curiosity to learn, to implement and things. You know, for me, it's learning is when you do learning by doing, not just learning. So in that ways, I think it's been changed. The education system has been changed where there is more learning by doing. But I think somewhere there is a disconnect with the natural environment. That connection needs to be built further.
And how was your home environment? Was paying attention to the environment and the impact that you're having on it, was that ever communicated, or even amongst your friends?
No, not really, because I was born in a city. I did not know half the plants, and for me it was just, anything was just like a tree or a flower. I didn't know the different species, or I do not really appreciate nature as much. So for us, it's more like, you know, you go to the gardens, you play and you come back. So it was more play, but I was never really connected with nature. And all around, it was more like a city where it's all buildings, and there was a real absence of nature. But now everything has changed, and I really make sure that my children do connect to the sounds of nature, to the different species, and do appreciate it.
Do you think that was just a sign of the time? So that, you know, years back when we were younger, mm-hmm. do you think that was just no emphasis placed on it or resources to be able to learn about this?
Yes, I mean, I was born, brought up in India, and that time it was more about growth and, you know, how to contribute to the economy and things like that. So it was never about, at least in my life, it was never about nature or protecting it, or even the very connection with it was missing for me.
Mm. And how would you say your childhood and schooling life in general was in India?
It was good. Like, it was very simple. I had good friends. I got good playtime, and it was nothing very stimulating and, you know, curiosity based. But it was very fun as well, because I had good friends and a good school life.
Yeah. Yeah. And so do you have any really fond memories of childhood or schooling that really stand out, or where you noticed it kind of changed your way of thinking?
I think I had really great friends, and that kind of a thought process is something that has really stuck with me today, where you are always there for your friends, and they are there, they bring a source of joy, and any trouble for us, it's like if it's shared, it's the trouble is reduced. So in that way, I was very lucky that I had good friends since childhood. I often brag as well, you know, that wherever I go, I'm able to have made some friends who I can keep for life. So that's something that started from childhood and has stayed along.
Yeah, you touched on a really interesting point there, which, because in season one, I spoke to members of my family who grew up in Africa, as Indians in Africa. Mm-hmm. And especially being there, the sense of community was everything, right? Especially, I think, mm-hmm. being Indians in Africa, so essentially growing up in a foreign land where you are still a minority, that mm-hmm. all Indians did stick together, and not in a sort of prejudice way, but in a way of looking out for each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so your family was your family, but also your friends and community were your family. Was that the same thing for you in India?
Yes, in India it was predominantly friends and family, which was my entire world was only them. I did not have anything else beyond that.
And so how was it to then leave India, and how did you come about with that decision?
I left India because I mean, I got married, my husband was traveling in different places. But then by the time I got married, I've also traveled within India, like Hyderabad, Bangalore and Chennai. And I've also developed a sense of thinking that if I'm leaving a place, it means that I am done with the place. There is nothing more that I can contribute, or there's nothing more that the place can contribute to me. So I've kind of developed the thinking. So I'm always open to new places and new people. And now I have also grown beyond, you know, geographically or, you know, race or religion. For me, it's like community is just humans and all earthlings together.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. And was it common for people within your, you know, like you say, within your friend circle to leave and explore new territories? Or were you doing something quite different to the people around you?
It was not very common, but at the same time, I was not the only one who was exploring. I mean, there were friends who did go out to other places and they were exploring different cities and different countries. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think it was that age when it was actually picking up where people actually started moving around and traveling countries.
Yeah, that's in the conversation with Joydeep, he talked about, especially when the borders were opening up and the rest of the world were realizing some of the talent that was coming out of India, then that mobility became a lot easier and efficient, and it made sense.
Yeah.
And so where did you go then after India?
I think I visited the Gulf first, Oman. And then we went, came back to India, then we went to Singapore. Again, we had a brief stint in India, then Singapore, and then we are in UK.
Wow.
And in between also, we had a stint in UK. Between the Gulf and India, we had a stint in UK as well.
That's amazing. And so when you left these places, was it the idea that you knew you were going to come back to India and they were just meant to be stints? Or, yeah, what was the reason that you were back and forth?
That's because my husband's job was like that, where he was required traveling, and he also chose different jobs in different countries. But I'm pretty open to travel or to explore any place. Because I remember the second time when we went to Singapore, he also was feeling a little guilty that I'm making the family travel so much. And he said, you know, I'm going to promise that this next 5 years we're going to be here in Singapore. But then after 6 months, he immediately changed the plan. And he was a little worried that, you know, it's again, I'm going to take her to an entirely different continent or anything like that. So I told him that even whichever place you can take, you take me, whether it's Somalia or any other place, happiness is something that comes from within. So it's not the place that matters.
It's a really good mindset to have. How do you think that mindset helped you with building relationships? Because, you know, if your mindset, or if you knew that you were only going to be in a place for a fixed amount of time, was that, did it act as a kind of barrier in becoming close to people, or were you able to embrace the mindset that you had and still build those relationships as truly as you would have in India?
Yeah, I did. I think I'm a very outgoing person. I mean, I don't hesitate. If I'm new in the building, I don't hesitate knocking the doors and saying that, hello, I'm your neighbor. And I think I had a very short stint in Singapore in 6 months, but I had built very strong relations with the community in terms of contributing to the community and organizing events. And even though it was very short, I really liked the send-off that they had given me of, you know, and appreciating all the efforts that we had done together. So I think when you have that mindset, settling down is very easy. And in such a global world, I think nothing is constant. You can be on the move anytime. So yeah, having such a mindset actually does help.
Yeah, no, I agree. And before we move on, two questions on that, tied together.
Mm-hmm.
Firstly, do you think living in different places and being able to explore new territories and lands, do you think that can be for everyone? And the second part to that is, what advice would you give to someone who is maybe interested to do it but fearful?
I think it's very important to have an open mind and not be you know, very judgmental about the way things are perceived. I think the idea, if you understand the person and the reason behind the person, it's very important to, I mean, it becomes very easy to connect to humans. I mean, if I can add, I have this very favorite book of mine, which is called Have a Little Faith by Mitch Albom.
Okay.
I think that was one of the most influencing books in my life. It's a story about, I think, a rabbi and a priest. And there is one particular incident where he keeps a photograph of a Muslim family. And then he gets questioned that, why are you keeping, you know, some other religion and you're giving so much importance? And he says that don't look at the religion, but he might be somebody's father or somebody's relationship. And he brings out that human connection. So in that way, that book has influenced my outlook as to how I look at people and how it is important to connect with the human of the other in the person. And then everybody is the same.
Yeah, I love that.
So then again, building relationships becomes very easy.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because it's, when you break down what you've said, I think most people will hear it and think, yeah, you know, a human is a human. It's obvious. But I think what I really like about you mentioning that book is that it probably can help people, or it gives people the encouragement to reflect on, do they hold any prejudice? You know, unconsciously, subconsciously, they may have a certain view of people because of the environment they grew up in, or the values or teachings of their parents or teachers in school, that they don't even realize has affected the way they think about certain groups of people, right?
Yeah, because even over here, I do face, there was a particular neighbor who was, I wouldn't say unkind, but who would never smile and would always have a stiff face. But I made it a point that whenever I see them, I do smile and wish them and go. And then eventually one fine day, it does return back. Whatever warmth you send out, it does return back.
I love that. And that's, I'm really glad you mentioned that story because, you know, I'm a big advocate of the be the change that you want to see, right? And that's what you're saying, right? You know, you obviously wanted this neighbor to be warm to you. And instead of kind of demanding or requesting it because you think you deserve it, it's like, okay, I'll be warm back.
Yeah.
Because that's how I'd want him to be. And then eventually you got the reciprocation. And I really think that, you know, from what I've read into what you do and what you're looking to do, that be the change that you want to see, it embodies you so well, which is why I think it's fascinating that, you know, to speak to you today.
Oh, thank you, Mike.
And so just before we get into that, so when you first moved to the UK, how was it integrating into the society and the culture?
I think it was not very difficult because London as such is very multi-ethnic and multicultural society. So it didn't take much time to integrate with the people. And also, I think I met quite a lot of people of different ethnicity which are working for the environment. So when you have one cause, the differences don't matter as much. So London has been easy for me. I mean, I didn't have find anything difficult in any city, but it was not very difficult to settle into London.
And you mentioned this, what you just said around you were able to meet people of different ethnicities who were interested in the environment. Did you notice any correlation that people who had lived in different parts of the world and come from different places tended to have more of an interest and maybe respect for the significance of the environment and
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you know, because the cause is same, I mean, the goal is same, that you have a better future, irrespective of where you live. When you give importance to the environment and you work for it, the benefit goes across the world, irrespective of from which ethnicity you're from. And I think that is why it is commonly respected. Even though, and it's easier, it's a very easy gelling point for anybody. Like, okay, you know, whatever she is doing or he is doing, it is going to benefit my children.
Wow, I love that. And so what I do know is you started up your own blog, which I believe was called I See Nature. And I can really resonate with this in, and I've talked about this in a previous conversation, that I do podcasting and I love it. And what I love about podcasting is it provides a platform that for the listeners to be inspired, but also for the host or the speaker to have a chance to get their views or their opinions, or for some cases, even these deep emotions that they don't know who to speak to. They have this platform where they can speak and then release their message to the public, to who wants to hear it. And so I see, you know, it's the same as blogging, but in writing form. So what was your inspiration behind starting that?
I think it's to pen down your emotions was the starting point, if I can be honest. Because writing does give some kind of solace. It gives forth more ideas. And it also is a medium for spreading your message. And, you know, when you bring your thoughts to one point, you kind of build on that thought and you actually find solutions for whatever you're thinking about. So I do like writing. So sometimes if I get too charged up because something is not happening right, I do go and write.
I love that. That's amazing. And so what was your mission with the blog?
To be honest, it was more a selfish this thing to put my thoughts in one place. But when there were people who resonated with the idea, and I thought if I share it, then probably people could have a different take towards the problem.
Mm.
Like, I remember it's mostly related to the environment, where because everybody is in a busy life, nobody stands to think of the environment or the connection with it. But sometimes when you're reading, probably I can enable that connection.
Do you have any specific moments or pivotal turning points in the writing the blog where you thought, wow, you know, because of my writing or because of this person, it's had an impact?
I think I particularly remember one incident at one Halloween event, because in every Halloween they have this trick or treat and they come back with a lot of junk which is in plastic. I would always discourage Halloween as that. I mean, if you want to give something which is wholesome and which is plastic free. And my daughter also was in a conflict whether she should go enjoy it. And I think I did pen down the thoughts on that blog, and I think that was received very well, and parents started to connect, and I think some of the parents did start to change, where they would not just give sweets, but they would give something which is wholesome, be it pencils or, you know, some sweets which are really good, not like junk sweets.
It's good. That is really good. And what I'll do in the show notes is post a link to that particular article, so if anyone is interested to read it, they can.
Yeah,
that's amazing. So this is only the beginning. So, you know, what came next for you?
I think I had when my daughter was born, I started with a yearly environmental goal. I started with, you know, not using plastic bags, and then using taking a reusable bottle. And every year on year, I did make a change. I became a vegan. I started composting. I started minimalism, and then I took climate reality training. That gave a big expansion to what I wanted to do and the message that I wanted to communicate. And after that, Ecofully was born and Climate Ed was born.
So this training that you mentioned, was that the was that the training with Al Gore?
Yes. It is the Climate Reality Project. It is the training which is given by former Vice President, U.S. Vice President Al Gore.
Wow.
And I think I was waiting for 2 or 3 years to get into the training, because first time when I came to know of it, I was pregnant, and then my son was very young. I didn't want to leave him and go. But eventually when I applied, I got selected. And I think that was a time when we had a change of residence. And I actually raised the funds and people contributed so that I could go to the training, as I wouldn't have been able to make it to that training. So I flew to Colorado, took the training, and I came back giving these sessions. And it was a very motivating, a powerful one as well. Personally, Al Gore has influenced me and the way the message is to be communicated. And he has this line that, you know, fight like your world depends on it.
Mm.
So that entire 3 to 5 day sessions was all fully charged up sessions, motivating you to do better communication for climate change.
That's amazing. And so what was the selection process to get onto it?
You apply online at the Climate Reality Project. You give why you want to apply. And then you get into, once you're selected, after the training, you are given a commitment where you have to give 10 acts of climate reality. Like, it could be the 10 sessions or somewhere where you have created an impact. So that's the thing of the training that you give. But yeah, you have to give the application should describe as to why you want to do it and what are you going to do after you take the training.
And as a little teaser, if you can, if there was one key message that you took out from there that you would want everyone to hear about, what would, do you know what that would be?
From the climate reality project? Yep. I think one key message was that the time is running out. We don't really understand the impact because there are so many events, climate change events that keep coming on TV every day, that it's forgotten or it's coming. I mean, on an average, there are close to 800 extreme weather events per year that happens in this world. Mm. And people do get impacted across the world, but we kind of do not know the extent of impact or the influence that climate change has on our lives.
Wow.
So the key message was the impact that, you know, on an average, there are close to 800 extreme weather events, and everybody of us have to start now.
It's true. And it's something that I've thought about, that, you know, I was born in London and I've lived in a few other places, but, you know, London is very I don't want to say neutral, but it doesn't really have extremes of weather, right? You know, if we get get 3 or 4 inches of snow, everything shuts down because we're just not able to handle it. And then, you know, I almost feel that when you live in a place that's so detached from some of these extreme conditions and places that are so easily impacted by the degradation of the environment, you know, when you are so removed from it, you almost become ignorant. People don't, they're like, oh, it doesn't affect me, so I don't see it. Do you see that changing? Do you see now that even people in places that are not really impacted by it are taking note and doing something about it?
I think it's a mix. I have seen people who are not impacted. It doesn't, I mean, not only in London, but I've also been in cities where, in India, where people have been impacted by climate change catastrophes, but then life goes on. They don't seem to be really doing anything or changing something in the lifestyle. And at the same time, I have seen people where, you know, they are concerned about the children. They do read up and they want to make small acts which can contribute to, you know, a better planet. To be honest, it's a mix. I think it's more on the indifference side rather than the change side.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it takes people like you to really make that difference, right? And I think you would have obviously built a great network through the climate change program that you did. And then, so did you then fall into creating EcoFully after that, or was there a time in between where you did something else?
I think we started on Climate Ed because Climate Ed started up in a pub where I went for a presentation which was given by another climate reality leader. And also, I had been giving certain small sessions in schools or at libraries for Earth Day, Oceans Day, where it's small workshops to, you know, connect children to what is climate change and the environment. So there I met up with another person, and he also was interested in training children for in schools about climate change. So that's when we met and we created Climate Ed. And now Climate Ed does, in the last 1 year, it's been quiet because of COVID. But otherwise, ideally, we go to schools and we do a 6-week sessions educating about the different aspects of environment, from energy, transport, food waste, and, you know, lifestyle. And then how you can actually reduce your carbon footprint. We educate the children on all aspects, and then we leave it to them whether they want to pick it up in the form of activism or communication in schools or in other schools, or they actually want to do a project where they reduce carbon footprint.
It's amazing. It's amazing work. And was this voluntary, or was this part of your...
It was voluntary. It started as voluntary. Wow. Because it's a fairly new charity. It got registered last year. So, yeah, we're looking to build it up further with more sessions in schools. And hopefully next year, with COVID getting better, we would have the opportunity as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. Good luck with that. And then so... Yeah, I'm really interested in EcoFully for, you know, a couple of reasons. But one quote I did read, which I loved, was the idea of every time you spend money, you are casting a vote on the future that you want.
Yes, yes. I strongly believe in that. There is a movie that I saw. It's called True Cost. It's about it's about the incident Rana Plaza in Bangladesh, where people get killed in an accident, and which was it's a garment manufacturing building, and the workers are getting impacted. The pay that they get is just peanuts, and they're not able to fulfill live a lifestyle of a decent lifestyle. And those clothes are those clothes are sold at high end costs to us as consumers, and what they actually receive is very less. So that's got me thinking, and I'm like, when I'm paying money to buy something, who is it actually going to? Are they ethical enough? Mm. Are they really contributing to the welfare of society? Now, I'm from India, and I've been brought up with the value that, you know, when you cook food, you should cook in a good mood. If you're angry or sad, you are discouraged from cooking food, because all the energy, all the vibes of that will go into the food, and the person eating it would also get the same vibes. So I'm like, if anybody is making my clothes or any product, they should be happy when they are stitching it or manufacturing it. And if they don't, all that would come to me.
Yeah.
So that is my philosophy. And irrespective of that, I think everybody deserves a decent lifestyle. And if I'm paying so much money, I do wish that everybody down the chain are actually benefited. So that got me thinking. So after that, I've made a significant in terms of purchases and things like that. And every time I do make a purchase, I do research and see how ethical or sustainable is that product. Like, for example, recently I got a phone. I had to change my phone, but I didn't switch to Samsung, or, you know, I had a Samsung phone, but I took this Fairphone, where all the materials is either recycled or ethically sourced, and all the metals and minerals, because you do not know how mining takes place, who's exploited and things like that. But now when I buy this phone, I know a fair price is being paid for all the people who work for this phone.
That's amazing. It makes me feel a bit guilty for, well, I have a Xiaomi, which is it's an Android, is the Chinese equivalent, but I definitely have no idea how it was made. So I think people react to it in different ways, but that makes me think that, okay, with my next purchase of something like that, I am going to try and look into it. So again, I hope that people who are listening to this, even if just one person or two people, can resonate with what you're saying and think, oh wow, I have no idea where half the stuff I have is made. It's something I'm going to look into. Then already it's starting to make some sort of impact. So it's amazing the work you're doing. And what are the kind of main goals of EcoFully?
It's not just EcoFully for me. I mean, it's been a principle of my life that whatever I do, that I should be enable a more sustainable and a more happy, connected society. So it's not that only I speak about sustainability, but I also speak about minimalism and veganism. Any other thing that makes us a more connected society and a more happy one, I am for it. So for me, it's not just EcoFully. I mean, whatever I do in my life, this is what I want to build for my children, and this is what I want to do.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's just something that you touched on, because I understand that your mission is to create what you call waste warriors.
Yeah.
And what I love about that is I truly believe that in order to make a impact on a significant scale, you know, global, regional, even just within your city, in order to have that impact and be a change maker, you need a community.
Yeah.
And so that's what I really like about the work you're doing, and even EcoFully and beyond, is that you're not just a business offering sustainable product alternatives to, you know, everyday common goods that people use and buy, but you're also really trying to educate and build this army, right, of people who are going to lead that change in the present and the future. That is something that I really love about what you're doing. How do you see that message really getting out there and making that global impact that you're looking to do?
I think for me, wherever I go, every person is an opportunity to make a change. And earlier, I mean, there was a phase in life where anything which was not environment friendly, where any practice of humans, it would kind of infuriate me. But now I've become more gentler, and I'm like, if I'm kind to the person, probably that kindness can bring a change. So I'm not with a fixed objective that I have to do it in X, Y, Z way, or, you know, I have to just use this path, but I'm pretty flexible, and I do try my best to support people in enabling them to be a better person. So when you take them out of the trouble, they when the trouble gets off, they have more space in the mind to think for something good. So that's how I look at it now.
It is a positive way, because the reason why I'm thinking is I hear so many different people's opinions of where we are with climate change. And, you know, one of the views is that we're too late.
Definitely.
Far gone. But then I can understand the urgency in that message, but there's also, it's almost a defeating mentality that, oh, you know, we're too late, so what's the point trying? Mm-hmm. Which I never agree with in whatever circumstance, right? There's always your little bit that can be done. And so, you know, how can people become more aware of what impact they can, but also what is happening in the world around us?
I think how can people become more aware is, I would say probably by reading and being connecting more to the natural world. But it's very difficult, because for a person whose survival is in question, I wouldn't go and say that, you know, you need to care for the environment and things like that. It depends on person to person. So mm-hmm. I would really look at it and see what's the best that I can do. And I would not try everything. For example, certain people would connect with veganism, certain with minimalism. I'll see what connects to them and I'll start with them. Because I know from my own experience, when you start on the journey, it is so uplifting and it's so encouraging that it catches on you, and you just go take one step beyond, you just take one step further and further. So the key is to find out what appeals to you, and you start working on it and you will catch on it.
Yeah, I love that, because it makes me think of something that I often say, which is, especially when I got more into spirituality and understanding what else is out there, it's this idea of not forcing yourself to have to give up things that you might have liked and looking to replace it with this idea of something better. But it's a process, right? As you start to read more into something and believe in it, naturally your mindset and desires are going to shift to wanting to do that, rather than it being a case of I'm forcing myself to do something because I think it's better.
Absolutely. I mean, I think for me personally, like, for example, if I take minimalism, people who come to my house and they're like, how can you live like this? Like, I have a very minimal house. I don't have beds. I don't have dining table. And there's hardly any furniture. And whatever furniture is there is mostly secondhand. And when people come in person, they think it's a deprived lifestyle. But when I talk about the benefits of it and I brag about minimalism, then they get very curious. Okay, probably that's something that we could try. Or at least their first thing is, maybe I will reduce the clutter. And once you reduce it, you find the peace of it. You will enjoy a house without things.
That's amazing. Yeah, I love that. And so are there any sort of events that are coming up that people could learn more about these things from?
There are a lot of events. I think I follow certain charities and they do a lot of webinars. I follow Center of Alternative Technology, which does a lot of free webinars on zero carbon Britain. So it's a charity which focuses on, you know, having zero carbon targets. I think another charity that I follow is Population Matters, and they focus on population as an issue. So it depends, whatever is your cause, it's something which attracts you. You subscribe to the charity, they do have events and the awareness builds.
Okay, great. Yeah. And I think, you know, definitely people, I'll give your contact details. What would be the best way for someone to get into touch with you if they wanted to find out more about one of these specific topics or areas?
I'm available. I mean, you could contact either through Ecofully as my site or on the Instagram page. And we as a business are not just as a business, but we are open to educating as well. So, I mean, if you go through our social media or anything, it's more about educating rather than about the actual business products. Mm. So, yeah, I always tell people, feel free to be in touch through Ecofully or through Climate Aid. And we will surely reply.
Amazing.
Anywhere I go, I speak about environment, minimalism and veganism. I think we've touched on everything.
It's great. And I'm so happy to be able to give you this platform to talk about these things, because, you know, like I said from the beginning, you're someone who's not just speaking about the change, but really leading this change. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy to be connected to someone like you.
Thank you. And I think if you don't walk the talk, there are less people who are likely to listen to you.
Yeah, that's true.
The walking the journey only gives more power to the talk, rather than the actual dog.
And it's the thing that you hear more and more about, but it's the idea of people identifying with the person behind a brand, right? The days of just creating a loyal community or even set of buyers and consumers mm-hmm. just based on the brand itself, it's not the world we live in anymore, right? People want to know who is the name and the face behind and what do they stand for. So
yes, absolutely. I mean, even if I'm buying something, I would like to go and see who is running the business and what they're doing. And yes, you're true, it's the person or the values behind the business do matter a lot.
Great stuff. And so if you're ready, we'll move on to the quick fire final five.
Okay.
Which, like I always say, the quicker the better. But if you really want to expand on one of the answers, then that's absolutely fine as well.
Yeah, okay.
So question one, how would you describe your upbringing and home environment in three words?
Simple, ordinary, and value-based.
I like that, yeah. It resonates a lot with the kind of life you lead now, right? It is very, you know, minimalist, mm-hmm. simple, yeah. but value-based. So there's a purpose behind why you lead this kind of life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, ours was a very simple and ordinary life where the basic ethics, you know, we were enforced for the basic value system.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And question two, what is your best or pivotal memory during your childhood?
I think the lunchtime with friends, I think that was one of the most happiest moments of childhood, which you know, made me realize how friendship is important. So that time I had with friends is something that I've carried on for life. And if someone say, my biggest asset is the friends that I have with me.
Oh, I love that. I hope they're listening to this and thinking, I'm so glad she mentioned that. And question three, complete the following sentence. Authenticity means...
Authenticity means when your thoughts, words, and your deeds are in sync. So for me, a person who is happy will have his thoughts, words, and deeds are in sync. And if they're not in sync, it means somewhere you are unhappy.
You said that so well. I hope people go back and listen to that, because what I like to do is take some of the key teachings that I learned from what people have said, and that is definitely one of them. So thank you so much for sharing that. Question four, which one country could other governments and countries look at as inspiration for what they're doing for sustainability and the environment?
I think Bhutan. There are a lot of other countries who do, but I like Bhutan particularly because it involves people from the top to the bottom. It involves all kinds of people. It involves women, men equally. And there is a greater respect for the environment and for the happiness quotient, which... I think if each country does give importance to that, we are living in a sustainable community then. It's a more happier world that way.
Do you know, I guess it's a separate point, do you know what their Bhutan's happiness index is, where they rank?
I think it's in the top 10.
Wow.
I mean, I'm not very focused on the numbers, but the ideology of behind what they do is something that has attracted to me. I mean, whether you're happy one or happy two is... it's immaterial, but if you are progressing towards a more happier society,
yeah,
that ideology is something that drags me.
Yeah, I'll be interested to know what and I imagine there is a strong correlation, but I would be interested to know what the correlation is between these kind of countries and economies that are more focused on a more, you know, sustainable or eco-environmentally friendly future and how their happiness ranks. Something I'll look into.
I remember recently there was, I had written a blog on sustainability and crime. And I remember mentioning that the more equitable distribution of resources are there, the more happier people are. And when there are more happy people, you have a less incidence of crime. So we don't need more police to control crime, but we need more equitable distribution and more happy people in the society to reduce crime.
Well said. And next question, what one suggestion would you give to schools to make them better at educating kids around these topics that you're passionate about?
I think one suggestion would be that they should have a more outdoor learning, more connected learning, connectedness with nature. Because once you appreciate nature, you have the urge to protect it and care for it. But when the disconnection is there, it is all, you know, you don't appreciate it as much. and you don't care for it.
That's really true. It just makes me think of my schooling life, and you know, the times I could say we were in nature would be if we were either playing sports or rugby, or a geography trip, which even then there would be one trip focused on human geography. So you are in the city and you know, counting traffic and population, so you're not really with nature. And then there would be one trip where you are being taught physical geography. And I'd say that was really the only time that you're even exposed to, okay, let's learn about soil, rivers, see nature and its beauty around us.
Mm-hmm.
But that, like I say, once a year, it's not really enough, is it?
But yeah, it has to be more a constant outdoor learning. Every day they have to be built with the idea of how important the environment is for them. Like, I remember there are a lot of things where people say, I love nature because the certainty that it gives to them. But how much of, when you really love a person, it's not about what you get from them, but it's what you give them.
Mm.
So, and you know, I come from a city in India where it's too populated and there is less of green space there. And when we go back, we kind of miss that green space, what we have, what we see here, little bit of green space, what we see here in London. So it's not about, and then we tend to appreciate it more and we wish that more changes do happen. That makes it a more better green space.
Yeah.
So when you're more connected, you kind of have the urge to protect it.
Absolutely. 100% agree. And the final question, what one small change can everyone make from today to help towards a better planet?
Oh, I've got lots. One small change. I think one in the UK, I think most of them are already doing it. A simple change would be to switch to renewable energy. And another significant step that they can take, like, you know, which can create a bigger impact is going plant-based.
Yeah. I mean, I love plant-based products. Mm. So, yeah, I do see a change. I see even, I went to a barbecue recently and I bought plant-based burgers. And it was interesting to see mm-hmm. how many of my friends loved the taste of it. And even some of them said, oh, yeah, you know, where I can, I try and eat these more. And mm-hmm. it was just great for me to see that,
mm-hmm.
that there are even people who I never would have mm-hmm. thought to do it. Not only are doing it, but enjoy the taste of the alternative. So,
yeah. And I think plant-based is one thing. Like, for example, if there is energy, there is pollution at the, you know, when there is production or when there is use of it. But when it comes to animal agriculture, there are a lot of aspects, where there is sea, the forest, there is deforestation, where there is water resources, land use. It's so extensive that I think when people go plant-based, they create an impact on all these aspects. Mm. For the benefit of the planet.
And the final bonus question that I ask everyone, how would you describe your life journey in a 6-word sentence?
I think very simple, ordinary, very fulfilling and uplifting.
Very positive. I love it. Great. Well, thank you so much for everything you've shared. And I definitely did learn so many bits and there's so much more I still want to investigate. So I'm going to be looking into more of your stuff and following and helping your mission going forward.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Anand. It was lovely talking to you. I mean, expressing my ideas also does give joy to me.
And I look forward to getting this conversation out there. So again, thank you so much. And I hope we stay connected.
Thanks, Anand.
And thanks to you for listening. My aim is to not only spotlight some of the valuable insights and experiences of the guests that led them to finding their purpose, but to see how you can apply some of the valuable lessons and perspectives to your own situation in a way that you may not have considered before, to see how it may help you to better identify what your own views and beliefs are and how these align with your daily life actions. I'm building out a third culture tribe, which will involve each of you, a platform where your expertise and passions can be spotlighted and shared to an audience, much like Vivina did in our conversation today. If you're interested to be a part of this growing tribe, then head over to the podcast page, podcast.thejourneyonwards.com/tribe, to leave me your email address and I will be in touch with you very soon with more details. As always, the contact information for myself and the guest will be in the show notes. Do not hesitate to reach out on anything that's been discussed. I'm always grateful for your feedback and reviews you can leave on Apple Podcasts. I'll be back next week for another episode. So until then, I hope your next week is even better than the last.